the title of the talk is Dark Matter Meets Quantum Gravity. And Manuel, please start.
Thanks, Stefan. And of course, thanks to all of the organizers for organizing this very nice online conference. So I'm talking today about Dark Matter Meets Quantum Gravity, which is work based work with Yuri Smirnov, published in this paper. And as you can see from the title, we are doing phenology from quantum gravity. And this, of course, only works under certain assumptions, which already start from the question, what kind of quantum gravity model one wants to use. And I'm going to focus here on asymptotically safe quantum gravity. Asymptotic safety is, of course, a very natural candidate to talk about a standard model beyond the standard model, since it's based on quantum field theoretical methods, and it's straightforward to include meta degrees of freedom. So asymptotic safety is one assumption that I'm using here in the talk. So I'm assuming simply the existence of the UEFX point, which provides me with a UV completion of my theory. As a second assumption, I need to also specify the dark matter that I'm interested in. What dark matter model do we want to investigate? And this, in fact, fixes the meta degrees of freedom such that together with asymptotic safety, we can get predictive results. How does this work? The asymptotic safety scenario provides Planck scale boundary condition for the meta degrees of freedom. And then we can evolve these Planck scale boundary conditions to infrared, where we in the end obtain strong constraints on the dark matter masses. And the upshot of all this is that we in the end get predictions, constraints that are all experimentally testable. And in the end, we of course want to, by these experimental tests, learn something about dark matter, but also potentially about asymptotic safety, which is of course much harder. So this is the overall idea. We want to combine these two powerful ingredients and obtain predictivity. And this can be applied not only to dark matter, but basically to any beyond standard model physics. Before one talks about beyond the standard model, I want to quickly say a few words about the standard model itself. So here in this plot, you can see the running standard model, the marginal standard model couplings, which are measured in infrared, and we can evolve them up to the Planck scale and even beyond. And the standard model has some very nice features, namely all the couplings are actually perturbative up to the Planck scale and even to some extent beyond the Planck scale. And Landau poles only arise beyond the Planck scale, namely the the U1 hypercharge coupling is diverging around 10 to the 40 GeV. And now the first question before you go beyond the standard model is, of course, how does asymptotic safety deal with the standard model itself? And in the past years, there's been a tremendous amount of work investigating this compatibility of asymptotic safety with the standard model. And I've listed some of the references here, but this is by no means a complete list, and apologies to everyone whom I left out here. So this compatibility between asymptotic safety and the standard model has actually two kinds of questions. So first of all, does the asymptotically safe fixed point persist under the inclusion of meta degrees of freedom? And the second one is, does quantum gravity cure the existence of the Landau poles in the matter sector? So does it also make the meta degrees of freedom finite? And as I said, there's been a tremendous amount of work, and I would say that so far we have found rather positive indications that asymptotic safety can provide, is actually compatible with the standard model. So about the first part, so does the fixed point persist with the inclusion of meta degrees of freedom? I will not say anything at all, but let me go a bit more into details about curing or avoiding Landau poles. So let me make a very simple example. We have a beta function of a meta coupling, and we split it into a meta part and we split it into a quantum gravity part. And in this example, the matter part is positive and wants to run the coupling into a Landauer pole. And here I've may make the example that the gravity contribution is negative and tries to pull it down again. If we have a large value of this coupling in infrared, the Landauer pole can occur even before the Planck scale or around the Planck scale. And in this scenario, of course, no quantum gravity model can ever cure this Landauer pole. So if such a scenario would be realized, you would conclude that we don't have full control over the matter degrees of freedom in our theory. If we now make the coupling smaller, and then we get the competition increases between the matter between the matter contribution and the gravity contribution. But if matter is still strong enough, then eventually it will win over the gravity contribution and still run into a Landauer pole at some point. If there's one trajectory where the matter contribution and the gravity contribution actually exactly balances each other out, and then we have an asymptotically safe matter coupling. And then there's many other trajectories where the quantum gravity actually wins over the matter contribution and eventually drives these matter contribution into an asymptotically free fixed point. And it is, from the asymptotic safety point of view, the task is to precisely determine the size of this window at the Planck scale. So from this simple example, it should become clear that such a window definitely exists, because if the Landauer pole occurs before the Planck scale, no quantum gravity model can help. But the size is, of course, something that is very difficult to determine. What is also should become clear from this picture, it's very useful to talk about this window at the Planck scale, because we are below the Planck scale, the quantum gravity quantum gravity contributions are strongly suppressed, while above the Planck scale, they are potentially dominating. So to determine the size of this window is a very difficult task, especially because the quantum gravity contributions are technically challenging to compute and because they're scheme dependent per se. I will come back to that in a second. So then also avoiding this Landauer, so if we have a Landauer pole in the standard model, this leads to a compatibility constraint with asymptotic safety. So is the standard model coupling compatible with the size of this window at the Planck scale? And on the other hand, if we go beyond the standard model and we include a new meta coupling that would potentially have a Landauer pole, then this leads to a constraint, a prediction of this new coupling, which we have not measured yet. So this is the picture. A Landauer pole leads to a constraint prediction, or if it's a standard model coupling, to a compatibility constraint. Okay, let me do this in more detail for the couplings that we have in the standard model. So let me start with the quartic scalar coupling. I split the beta function to a meta part, which is positive, which wants to drive it to a Landauer pole. And it actually turns out that the quantum gravity contribution is positive. So it doesn't prevent the coupling to run into a Landauer pole. So in the end, the boundary condition is actually rather strict, that the potential has to be flat at the Planck scale. Lambda has to roughly vanish at the Planck scale. We have one quartic coupling in the standard model, the quartic coupling of the Higgs, the quartic Higgs coupling. And if we apply this boundary condition to this, this works actually remarkably well. So the quartic Higgs coupling is roughly vanishing at the Planck scale, and the mass range the mass prediction from this boundary condition is roughly in the range of 126 to 136 GeV, depending on some small details, for example, on the top mass and other details. So the the only coupling which we have in the standard model roughly fulfills this Barrow strict boundary condition. Then we have U1 gauge couplings. We again split the beta function into a matter part and into a quantum gravity part. We have the scenario that I have schematically shown on the last slide. The quantum gravity contribution is negative. It wants to prevent the Landau pole. So I have said before that this number is actually scheme dependent. It's actually not just a number. It is a function of all gravity couplings. But we are in this picture that below the Planck scale, these contributions are strongly suppressed. And above this Planck scale, they're rather quickly going into a scaling regime. And this becomes roughly a constant number. And it is a scheme dependent number, but in many investigations, it has been determined that this is most likely larger than zero. This upper value is rather less known, but we're using here a rather large upper value in order to compensate for the scheme dependence. Actually, most things that I'm going to tell you today are only mildly dependent on the actual value of this coupling. And from this, we get then the size of the this window at the Planck scale that I've talked about on the last slide. We have one U1 gauge coupling in the standard model, the U1 hypercharge coupling, and this compatibility actually works out. But what we want to do now is we want to go beyond that. We want to apply this to new couplings, which we don't know. And if we have if we add a new quartic scalar coupling, we have the boundary conditions that it has to roughly vanish at the Planck scale. And we have an upper bound on new U1 gauge couplings at the Planck scale. So this is the predictivity from asymptotic safety. Now let me also introduce what we do on the dark matter side. So also here we have to do, of course, assumptions, and we are tailoring our model such that it is a particle and that this particle is actually produced via freeze-out mechanism. Both of those are still very common assumptions so many dark matter models are based on this. And the freeze-out implies that, so how does the freeze-out work? In the beginning of the universe, the dark matter particle is in thermal equilibrium. The universe is expanding and cooling down. And at some point, the expansion rate becomes larger than the interaction rate. And then effectively, the dark matter decouples, and one is left with a finite relic density. And together with the knowledge of how much dark matter we have in the universe, this actually determines the annihilation cross-section of the dark matter. And note already here that if you have a weaker coupling, the dark matter is decoupling earlier from the universe and you're left with a larger relic density. And if you have a stronger coupling, you have a smaller relic density. One of the most common examples of dark matter is still the Higgs portal coupling, where you introduce a new dark scalar S, and the interaction with the standard model happens via this portal coupling. So the interaction is two Higgs to two dark scalars. And this is actually a very interesting model still. And from the asymptotic safety perspective, it's also particularly interesting because we have a rather strong constraint on this portal coupling. Quartic scalar couplings have to vanish at the Planck scale. So this coupling has to vanish at the Planck scale. So that means that only if you only have this extension, if you have only this simple dark matter model, then the portal coupling is zero at the Planck scale. And if it's not generated, then it is not compatible with this freeze-out mechanism. So we have bit more.
2 minutes.
Yeah, thanks. So we have to do a bit more than a Higgs portal coupling. And I will quickly try to explain what we have put as an input, how we come to this dark Lagrangian. So we have a Higgs portal coupling. We need something which generates this Higgs portal coupling, otherwise it is vanishing on all scales. And we need to generate it preserving the Z2 symmetry of the dark scalar. So that's why we add a dark U1X gauge group, that's this here, which generates the portal coupling without symmetry breaking. And this has a dark photon, the set prime, which has a mass via Stickleback mechanism, and in order such that we don't get into vacuum stability problems of this new scalar, we also add a dark fermion, and this saves the vacuum stability of this dark scalar. And interestingly, this model has two regimes, so either the scalar or the fermion is the dark matter particle. So just by demanding that we want to have a dark Higgs portal, Higgs portal model with the freeze-out mechanism, naturally led actually to this dark Lagrangian, which includes a gauge group, a scalar, and a fermion. Okay, now we need to constrain the portal coupling, because this is in the end what determines the relic density. And here you see one example of how the couplings evolve from the Planck scale down to the infrared. So here you see that all the quartic couplings are vanishing at the Planck scale. And also here we have the new two gauge couplings. They're satisfying the boundary conditions at the Planck scale. We have to make a scan over all possible couplings which are compatible with asymptotic safety in order to determine what is the largest possible value of the portal coupling that we can achieve in infrared. So here, for example, it's roughly 10 to the minus 2 to the 2 times 10 to the minus 3. So this is why our model in the end gets predictive. So the quartic couplings are vanishing at the Planck scale, and the question is how large can the portal coupling become in infrared? Actually, there's another interesting mechanism in our model. In order to raise the portal coupling, we are also we have a problem with the Higgs mass. So we are changing the Higgs mass if we raise the portal coupling too much. So in the end, we give our predictions as an error on the Higgs mass. So if you demand that the Higgs mass is within the range of 125 plus minus 10 GeV, we get that the portal coupling at the TV scale has to be less than 0.15. Okay, so how does the phase diagram of the scalar dark matter model look like? So here I show you this phase diagram as the mass of the dark matter particle versus the portal coupling. And the constraint that we have the right amount of dark matter in the universe cuts out exactly one line out of this phase diagram. This is the dark blue line until you see an extension to larger dark matter masses. If we're in a white regime, we have too little dark matter, and we would need to add a further dark matter component. If we are in a blue regime, then we would have too much dark matter, so we automatically exclude it. Now we have our constraint from dark matter, from quantum gravity. The portal coupling cannot be larger than 0.15. So this effectively cuts off this mass range, and dark matter masses above a few TV are not allowed anymore. If we overlay this with the already existing experimental constraints from xenon 1 ton and Fermilab, which are, I don't have time to talk about this, so I will skip that. So anyway, we are getting to a very small allowed range for the dark matter mass, which is between 56 GeV and 63 GeV. I do not have time to talk about the other hierarchy of this model where the fermion is actually dark matter candidate. But let me just say that also here we have found rather strong constraints on the dark matter mass, namely that the fermionic dark matter has to be definitely less than 50 TeV. Okay, so let me summarize. We have made two assumptions, namely that we have an asymptotically safe UV fixed point, and we have made the assumption that that dark matter is produced by our model in with a freeze-out mechanism. But these two assumptions have led us to very strong constraints. And the thing that I want to emphasize most is that these models are actually experimentally testable. And for me, one of the decisive questions is also, what can we learn about quantum gravity from experimental tests of these models? So what we interpret, if dark matter is actually detected in this Higgs resonance, we could only make this happen by introducing a new gauge group. So we have then the kind of prediction that we need to also find a new gauge group which actually generated this portal coupling and allowed it to reach up to these values. And if we find an experimental detection outside of the constraints that we provided, then of course this might be interpreted as a negative hint for asymptotic safety. So I think it's very nice that we have this option of indirectly learning something about asymptotically safe quantum gravity. And with this, thank you for attention.
Okay, thank you very much.